Thank you for downloading this edition of The Why Factor from the BBC World Service, a programme that seeks to find out why we do the things we do.
So I was 18, 19 at uni, hearing three guys talking about me. I used to imagine them as like three scientists almost, observing me in an experiment, describing what I was doing. You know, Rachel is walking down the corridor. She's stupid. Why doesn't she kill herself?
Meet Rachel Waddingham.
Guys, it's like introducing you to a giant family, isn't it? I should give
it
you
is.
Pictures.
That's what it feels like to me as well. And meet the voices that inhabit Rachel's head.
The youngest is probably Blue, who's about three. She's this very sad three-year-old, but also really mischievous. She thinks my husband is a giant smelly poo bum.
Mm-hmm. She sounds exactly like a three-year-old.
Really is. I didn't realise how close she was in age-appropriate things she says until I was on the train with another young girl who was like playing, and she was on the opposite side of the table to me, and my little Blue voice was getting really excited, and they sounded really similar.
The three-year-old in your head was getting excited about being near another three-year-old.
Well, I think it was the toys that she had that were particularly exciting. She was definitely up for playing. Obviously, not entirely possible.
This is the BBC World Service, and you're listening to The Why Factor. I'm Chloe Hadjimatheu, and this week we're asking why people hear voices. I've always associated hearing voices with mental illness, and I find the idea particularly terrifying because it seems to be an intrusion into what I think of as my most private space, my mind. But for people like Rachel, there is no private space.
The first time I heard them, I remember being in bed and just freezing, feeling like I couldn't move and hearing them say these horrible things.
You're so stupid.
No. Don't listen to them.
Why do you even bother?
It's not safe.
You're disgusting.
They're watching everything you do.
You make me sick.
You'd be much better off if you just
ended it all.
Go on.
They're the kind of stereotypical voices that in the media that everyone gets freaked out about, you know, the voices that tell someone to kill or abuse someone.
So worthless.
Don't let them catch you.
Go on.
No one.
They're watching you now.
You are Do revolting.
It. You have to kill them.
I can't stand you.
Quickly, kill them. Go on.
I can't stand you.
Go on.
It was terrifying. It scared some of my other voices.
That's interesting. Yeah. So voices are hearing each other.
Yeah. It's a bit like having a network inside your head.
Do you ever feel tired of them all?
Get tired of some of them. I shouldn't say that out loud. I think with Elfie, so that's the preteen 11-year-old, she can get quite angry. This is the thing, it's like some of them can hear. If I was to just suddenly go, oh my God, she's so annoying, that would probably cost me.
Up to 85% of people will hear isolated one-off voice experiences over the course of their lifetime.
Dr. Angela Woods from Durham University in the UK is the co-chair of Hearing the Voice, one of the world's most comprehensive research projects about the experience of hearing voices.
This could be someone hearing somebody shout your name when there's nobody there. It happens to us at the borders of sleep. And certainly if you were to be put in an isolation tank and cut off from all forms of sensory and social stimulus for, say, 48, 72 hours, it's almost guaranteed that you would start hearing voices.
Most of us will experience these one-off auditory hallucinations at some point. But what's happening to Rachel is much more extreme. She's part of only 2% of the population who are inhabited by voices, with whom they have full-blown relationships.
There's been, I think, a suspicion by some people about whether or not voices are essentially fabrications. The voices are as real as the things that we really experience in the world.
We also know people like Rachel aren't making it up because we can monitor their brain activity.
If you put somebody who hears voices into a brain scanner and you ask them to indicate by pressing a button when exactly they are hearing voices, you can then definitely register differences in the brain.
Scientists like Dr. Woods can see parts of the brain light up each time someone hears voices.
Some people experience voices indistinguishable from other auditory and speech experiences, but other people report much more confounding experiences.
And here is the difficulty in trying to fully imagine the experience of someone like Rachel.
No, I don't talk bollocks.
Yes, you do. Bollocks. Yes, you do. You'll never do that task. You did it long last time.
If you are sitting in a coffee shop, you'll hear the people at the table next to you. That's kind of like it's like for me hearing voices.
Look, you've done it wrong.
What you're listening to is an audio simulation created by people who hear voices to help us understand what it's like for them.
Why are you checking it if you think it's right?
Unsettling, isn't it?
Shows that we control you or you wouldn't have checked it.
It's as real.
Yeah, just like that.
We control you. We control you.
In fact, the experience is far more confusing than this.
There's other voices that are more kind of embodied. I feel the presence of them. So before you asked about Elfie, when I was being really careful of my language, it's because I can feel Elfie around.
She may not be speaking?
Yeah, it's just she's there.
Like somebody sitting in the room?
Yeah, like someone sitting in the room. It's like the voices who I hear are also there when they're not speaking.
And then there are what Rachel bizarrely describes as non-verbal voices.
I have a scream voice, a disembodied scream. That voice, I can hear her as a scream, but then I get the silent scream, which is, I don't hear her. I feel the pressure of the scream on my ear. So I know she's there when I feel that pressure. It's a sensory experience. So just treating them as just voices doesn't always work.
I know what you're thinking. Is Rachel mad? The answer is yes and no. Rachel was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, a combination of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. She spent years on antipsychotic medication, going in and out of hospital. Today, she still hears voices, but Rachel's not unwell. She works and lives a normal, balanced life, free from medication. If she hadn't told me, I would never have guessed what's going on in her head. So what's changed? Well, her relationship with her voices, for a start. And that's in large part because of groundbreaking new approaches to voice hearing.
Taught me to hear cough. My name's Lynn. I hear voices, suffer with paranoia.
Hello, I'm Simon. I've been hearing voices for about 20 years, roughly.
In a small, nondescript room in the centre of Sheffield in the north of England, 10 people sit in a circle on plastic chairs in what could easily be mistaken for an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. This is the Hearing Voices Network.
My name's Ronan. Been hearing voices for about 13 years. I've got borderline unstable personality disorder.
Meetings like this one have been popping up all across the UK and in many other countries around the world. Everyone here is a voice hearer and they've come together to share their experiences.
So I'm Rufus. I work as a clinical psychologist and got a keen interest in helping people who've got difficult relationships with voices.
And my name is Elizabeth, and I'm originally from Denmark and now live in England. And I work with the Hearing Voices Network.
So did you guys meet through the Hearing Voices Network?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Elizabeth Svanholmer hears voices and uses her experiences to counsel others. Her partner, Rufus May, is one of the pioneers of what's known as voice dialoguing.
I was a psychologist and I'd never talked about having gone a bit mad myself. I'd never heard voices, but I had had lots of strange experiences and beliefs that led to me getting a year's psychiatric treatment. And a Hearing Voices conference was the first place I was felt able to talk about those experiences. So I felt like I spiritually came home. It was more the values of the Hearing Voices movement, which was about how personal experience of altered states of mind or different states of mind is valuable and we should try and listen to it and find meaning in it.
It was after one of those Hearing Voices meetings that Rufus and his patient decided to try something new. Until relatively recently, the common wisdom among psychiatrists was that it was dangerous to engage with a patient's voices, that that would in some way be colluding with a delusion and could exacerbate the problem. So what Rufus decided to do was pretty radical. He wanted to address the voices in the patient's head directly.
I remember the first time we did it, her voice said, "You don't know what you're messing with." You know, and it was true. You know, and it was scary.
What were you afraid of?
I was afraid of making it worse, really. Is it going to make the voice stronger by listening to it? Is it going to make it more powerful in the person's life? But we persevered and found that if you could stay calm and stay understanding and curious, the voices we were trying to dialogue with started to become more reasonable or make more sense or be more willing to negotiate.
In these dialoguing sessions, the therapist addresses a voice directly.
"What do you think of me?"
And the patient reports exactly what the voice has said in response.
"You're a negative, non-plural crap."
"And what do you think of Jackie?"
"There's somebody I can wind up, bug, cause chaos."
"So do you enjoy that?"
"Well, you do that too, with your petty therapy sessions."
"And how are you getting on?"
Have you ever made things worse by dialoguing?
Yes, there's been a couple of times where I think I was too courageous and it didn't set enough safety ground rules.
And I would say that even if you build up a good relationship with someone, it's quite likely that it's going to get worse for a while, because whenever there's change, it upsets the status quo and the voices might get anxious about what's going on. They might be really scared that you're trying to get rid of them.
In making a programme about voices, it would seem strange not at least to attempt to elicit an opinion from the voices themselves. I wondered whether Elizabeth's would talk to us.
Could we consult them for this programme? Could we consult some of them now? So the programme is called The Why Factor.
Yeah.
And we're asking why people hear voices.
Yeah.
What do they think?
One of the voices is called Domina. She is more puzzled why some people don't hear voices than actually why people do hear them. There's another voice, a male voice that I hear, that's called Soren. What he says about it is that human beings are wired for relationships and communication, so of course they're going to hear voices.
Are you translating now? Are they speaking Danish?
No. Those two both speak in English, yeah.
The old Queen's Head pub in Sheffield. I'm having lunch with Peter Bullimore, the former chair of the UK chapter of the Hearing Voices Network.
They have three external voices that are quite demonic and nasty and very critical all the time. But I have two internal ones that are quite friendly and helpful. One is my creative side, and that's the voice that helped me write a children's book.
"Come here, Candy Lee," he called. "Why are you not at school?" he asked. "I haven't got a lesson today, Sergeant Pump," Candy Lee replied. "That seems strange," said the sergeant. "I thought Miss Round taught you all together. She said I could have the day off as I was the oldest."
The voice appeared just in the middle of the night, and it just, about 3 o'clock in the morning, just woke me up and it just said, "A village called Pumpkin." And I thought, what is this? And then it would just come back and it used to give me strange names of people that I kept writing down. So it was a bit spontaneous, but it would only say things once. I was once going on holiday to Tenerife and it gave me the ideas for a chapter of the book, but I had nothing to write on, so I had to actually write it on a vomit bag on the plane going along. So, and it was there for 6 years. There was no set pattern.
"I will help the tubby hogs," he shouted, raising his arm in the air. He quickly ate his porridge and went into the garden. "Tubby hog, tubby hog, where are you?" he shouted. He heard a rustling in the compost heap.
What did the publisher say when you arrived and said, "This book's been dictated by a voice in my head"?
I think they were a bit shocked at first, but then they took a real interest in it. And then the day I picked the book up from the publishers, I've never heard the voice since.
Like Rachel, Peter spent years in hospital on medication, which he says failed to silence the voices. But then he found that Hearing Voices group in Sheffield. He came off all his medication and began leading a fully functional life for the first time in years. Today he holds a view some people would find controversial.
Hearing voices has never been an illness. It made me ill through the stress and the pressure, but it wasn't an illness in itself. So we're treating something biologically. You're trying to use a biological cure for something that's got no biological cause.
So what you're saying is that the voices are driving people crazy because they don't know how to interact with them.
Yeah, there's no relationship with it. There's no real understanding because no one listens. We say voices are messengers that sometimes bring awful messages. But we also say at times, don't shoot the messenger because they've got something really, really important to say.
Pete says that when his negative voices get loud, he responds to them with compassion and reassurance, and that helps calm them. Lots of voice hearers say this approach works, but it's important to note that for some people, medication is still very useful. Just like their voices, no two people who hear them are the same. One thing that many voice hearers do have in common is that they've suffered some kind of trauma in early life.
It's absolutely clear that the relationship between childhood adversity, particularly childhood sexual abuse, particularly forms of structural adversity like poverty, like great family instability, that traumas that happen in early life have a really, really big impact on increasing people's potential to hear voices in adult life. The associations between childhood adversity and hearing voices are as strong as the associations between smoking and lung cancer.
According to this theory, when a young person suffers abuse, the trauma is so great that as a coping mechanism, the feelings that are too overwhelming for the child to experience directly break off and become externalised. This is certainly one way Rachel understands her voices.
I think it wasn't the abuse that was such a problem, it was the secrecy. I think I suppressed it and squished it down. And the voices are almost like metaphors of that, or windows into that, or portals. But is that why I hear voices? Is it because I went through trauma? And I don't know. That certainly gives them the form, but it may be that I have genetically the ability to hear voices. Maybe I have a gift. I don't know. Some people see it as a gift.
That's how Gogo Dineo Ndlazi from South Africa sees it. She's made a calling and a career out of her voices.
I grew up in Alexandra Township in the 80s. I was an extremely intelligent academic child, so I decided I'm going to be a chemical analyst.
It was while she was at university that Gogo Dineo first started hearing voices. The response from her Christian community was violent.
They attempted to exorcise the demons. And I used to be aggressively held down by men. You know, each man would hold a different part of my body. It was very frightening. And then I ended up going to a mental institution for 6 months. And I was diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy. I was given medication.
Did that help? Did that make the voices go away?
It made it worse.
Until one day she met a sangoma, a traditional healer or diviner, who explained to her that she had a gift, and that what she was hearing was actually the voices of her ancestors.
So it's very frightening if you've been taught the scientific way, you know, but once you understand that spirit works in this majestic, magical way, it becomes okay. The voices are still present, but I know how to channel them. So we don't say they are the voices, they are our ancestors.
In many tribal cultures around the world, including South Africa, there isn't a sense of the mind as a private space. And so there isn't the fear and stigma that usually accompanies hearing voices in the West. Instead, voice hearers are accorded a special status as someone who's able to channel spirits. Once, she aspired to be a chemist, but Gogo Dineo eventually turned her back on science and found answers in traditional spirituality. Today, she's a practicing sangoma and holds ceremonies like this one in which she consults her tribal ancestors on behalf of paying clients. Interestingly, Gogo Dineo says she can now exercise a certain amount of control over her voices. And that's something that's caught the attention of scientists like Dr. Philip Corlett, an award-winning experimental psychologist and neuroscientist. His recent experiments at Yale University in the USA have centred around inducing auditory hallucinations.
We use a procedure called Pavlovian conditioning, which I'm sure many of your listeners will be familiar.
That's the famous study when dogs were given food every time a bell was rung, until the association between bell sound and food became so strong they would salivate as soon as they heard the sound.
We paired the presentation of a checkerboard stimulus with the presentation of a very difficult to hear auditory tone, a 1 kilohertz tone. And over many, many trials, we pair vision and audition together over and over again so strongly that after a while, we can present you with the checkerboard stimulus, just the visual stimulus, and you'll start to believe that you heard the tone, even though no tone was presented. If you're someone who hears voices, you're about 10 times more likely to show that effect. You show it earlier and it lasts longer than someone who doesn't hear voices.
Until now, most studies have focused on the regions of the brain to do with language. But this study zeroed in on the bit of the brain associated with perceptual expectation, what we predict might be about to happen.
It turns out that a neurochemical called acetylcholine seems to be really important in specifying perceptual expectations. And so by modulating that chemical in people who specifically have this deficit, this problem of very strong perceptual beliefs, we might be able to better treat them. 30 to 50% of patients, despite taking the medications that we have available to us now, still have residual psychotic symptoms. And so we'd like to use this to develop new treatments.
Dr. Corlett wants to take his work one step further, to study the brains of people like Gogo Dineo, people who claim to be having a spiritual or psychic experience when they hear voices.
One of the key differences, though, between the psychics and the patient voice hearers is that the psychics claim that they have volitional control over the onset and the offset of the voices, which patients much more rarely do. And so what we're trying to do next in the work is learn how the psychics do that, scanning them whilst they exert control over their voices or not. And so we're trying to strengthen that control circuitry in patients that hear voices.
So what do we know about the voices in people's heads? Most of us will experience some kind of auditory hallucination at least once in our lives. Around 2% of people hear voices regularly, and more than half of those live ordinary, healthy lives without the need of psychiatric care. And maybe the voices just want to be heard. This is the BBC World Service. You've been listening to The Why Factor. You can catch up on previous editions online, including Why Do We Talk to Ourselves? And Hypochondria. To let us know what you thought, or to suggest a subject for a future edition, email yfactor@bbc.com. For this edition, I'll let Rachel, whose voices we heard at the top of the programme, have the final word.
My question is, why do we need to know why I hear voices? I think I've found my life a lot easier when I just accept that this is my experience and it may or may not continue, and just think, well, human beings are a bit weird. This is my weirdness.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you might like our new 10-part series about a young woman called Alice, who hears voices.
When I first ever heard voices, I genuinely believed I was telepathic.
She's had lots of different characters in her head since she was a teenager. They all have names and personalities, and they're difficult to ignore.
I honestly thought that I was just a late bloomer to this whole telepathic thing.
You'll hear Alice describe the very first voice she ever heard.
I don't see Donna as a person. I kind of see her as a colour, as a murky green and black.
And although many of her voices are frightening, Alice will invite you to meet some of those who make her laugh.
I hear, just to name a few celebrities, then presenters from MasterChef. I'm not being funny. They criticise about how I'm seasoning my food, and trust me, it is irritating because I enjoy cooking.
The podcast is called I Hear Voices, and it's all about what it's really like living with schizophrenia. You can download the whole series now. Just search for I Hear Voices wherever you get your podcasts from. All 10 episodes are also available on the BBC Radio 1 website.